Good morning and welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Okay, folks, we've had an hour of quick hits here and there. We've got John Jurecic, we've got Dale Gann, we've got Lisa Helps, we've got Daniel Egan. Now we're going to talk about the issues. Okay, we're going to step back and take a look at the bigger stuff. One of the areas I want to go, and I know Danielle and Lisa want to talk about this, is we've talked about all the great things that our post-secondary system could be doing. But what we haven't talked about is, okay, how do we give it access to it to everyone? And, you know, everyone has heard about student debt and what the problems are. And I just want to warn everyone at the outset, I have the solution to this problem. and it not only solves that problem, but it solves the whole issue of how we should be funding post-secondary education. But I'll let everyone else talk first.
Can I jump in on the guinea pig thing?
Sure.
I just wanted to briefly say about that, because it seems that many of the universities are using this catchphrase about universities being living labs and really stimulating research. And there are some real drawbacks for the students there potentially, because you want to make sure that students aren't feeling like they're rats in a maze. And one of the issues with this research intensive university focus is that, sure, you're getting all of this money from the feds for research dollars, but is it being wisely spent? And when you have corporations and private sector coming in and using these universities, these publicly funded universities that have lots of great resources, if you're not sure that you're really able to help the students and provide them with a really well-balanced education, you're in jeopardy. So it's a jeopardy to the student spirit in general. So I think universities have to be really careful about that students are always front and center, that their experiences on campus are always front and center. So while it's great to have private partnerships and stimulation programs for the students to help them get jobs, it's also really important that they're not playgrounds for the private sector.
I know that Dale wants to respond to that, and I have to say I'm a little hurt. I said that, you know, I had a solution to the access issue and student debt and public funding for universities and colleges, but clearly no one's interested in it. So.
Why don't you just tell us, and then we can see whether we think it'll work.
Okay. Yeah. Dale, I'll let you respond to Danielle, because you're chomping at the bit over there.
Yeah, I am. I guess I have the pleasure of living each and every day over the last decade watching these announcements on the achievements of succeeding to write an application, raise the money, and say, yahoo, we've got that grant funding. We're doing it because there's merits of it, because it has been looked at from an independent body. But this is the thing. Education is and business is a contact sport, and we need experiential learning. And I take issue that we're putting students as guinea pigs in a maze. Let's take one example in Victoria. We recently launched the UVic Aerospace Center. A really bright associate vice president, Dr. Asal Suleiman, has been designing unmanned aerial vehicles with students and co-ops, and he raised and set up a center. He got some money. He now has a center. Hey, and he's partnering with Viking Air and the U.S. military and others on developing this, and students are getting experiential learning and getting an opportunity to work with industry. And I just say, you know what, that's a great classroom.
Yeah, Lisa.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's a great classroom, and that's one way, and that's one really important way. But I think that what Danielle's kind of hearkening against is that would be the only way. Mm. And I think that's really important. They're experiential learning, partnering with industry. Again, like you said in the first half of the show, taking ideas and turning them into the marketplace. That's awesome. And lots of students thrive on that. And there are others who want to have a different kind of pace, a slower pace. Look at the classics, look at, you know, whatever, the history of Canada. I mean, I've taught courses at UVic on Canadian history, and my students love it. Why? Because I make it relevant. I make it connect to their lives. And I think we need to have, it's an and. We can't just have education going in one direction.
No. Yeah, and it's also, as well, you also have to worry about content. I had one student at one of the business schools telling me that one of his classes, they did a case study with a corporation in Canada, and And it was a critical, in-depth study of this specific corporation. And when the donor that had provided millions of dollars to the university in donations found out that they'd done this case study, he freaked right out. And so, again, you have to wonder about the corporate influence on the students. So if it affects the quality of the education and the variety of education and exposure they're getting, then that becomes a concern. How often this happens, I have no clue.
So I have a great little segue, I think, that's really important here. I'm going to use the word student. So let's go to K to 12 and take still the experiential learning. I've had the pleasure to get off our continent and see other systems, and K to 12 in India and Singapore and China and Japan, and K to 12, and turning on that with this challenge, how do we turn on the light bulb in the K to 12 system? How do you get those students to see all the opportunities? And I think one of the real important parts we've been talking about, post-secondary education, I truly believe that we can't have a conversation about post-secondary education unless K to 12 is sitting at the table.
Exactly.
They're so important. The parent, the home, the kid at the K to 12 system, and the people involved in the K to 12 system, and the post-secondary education system. And so I'd like to see us spend some time talking about giving these kids the opportunity to get exposed to all the things they can do.
That's interesting, because I was looking at the public sector funding, for BC provincial public sector funding, and looking at the stats on increases in sectors, and it seemed that the only sectors that are, I mean, there are a few sectors that are involved, a few government organizations, local municipal governments have been negatively affected, but a ream of schools, school boards have been affected, so they've had major cuts, and you have to worry about that. You have to worry about, well, how is that going to help with the pool moving forward if we have all these cuts at the grade school level? That's really worrisome. I mean, it even starts before kindergarten. It starts at the preschool level, and when in BC we've got 9 years running, we have the highest child poverty rate. So those are really big concerns.
I think one of the problems we have, and it's, you know, because of what we've grown up with, and is we keep thinking about the choices being about more or less, you know, rather than thinking about doing things differently. You know, because one can go on and on about the reasons why. I mean, I would argue why, if we're only going to talk about more or less, well, you know, there's going to be less.
And why is that? Why?
Well, I just think we've reached a point where our fiscal sustainability, in terms of the manner in which we have funded a whole manner of public infrastructure, is just not sustainable anymore, and it's, but it's not an issue of whether or not those services are going to deteriorate. They will deteriorate if they continue to be dependent upon the manner in which, you know, we've been funding them. And instead, what we have to do is start thinking about doing things differently and taking different models. I mean, this is when, you know, this debate always comes up in healthcare in terms of talking not about public versus private, but talking about, you know, blended systems. You know, it came up during the conversation on health and you know, the fact that we tend to approach healthcare as, you know, you only have good healthcare if you have a hospital in every small community, whereas, you know, you would probably have better health care if the opposite was true. But, you know, and I think maybe, you know, that's – the door is open when we start looking at what universities and colleges have had to do to replace the public funding to look at different ways of doing that. And what I'd like to do when we come back from the commercial break is again, return back to – my solution on access, which is going to solve the whole thing.
You better tell
us,
because
I get annoyed
us.
With
yeah.
you because that you know, it's an example of saying, okay, let's change the paradigm here.
We need to change the paradigm.
Let's change the paradigm. And anyways, I will illuminate everyone when we come back from commercial.
We can feel it.
Okay.
Right now, Jill is wailing on her guitar. But a year ago, it was just a dream.
Then she started building her rebate at Peninsula Co-op. Fuel for the car, coffee at the convenience store, visits to the touchless car wash. And when she got her rebate check, she made that guitar hers. Maybe next year's rebate will pay for lessons. Peninsula Co-op members got 5 cents per liter on all fuel purchases last year. Visit your local co-op today.
Stop, fill it up at your co-op. Moving ahead by giving back.
20 years into the future.
Can't believe we're still living with your parents.
On the bright side, the rent's okay.
Why didn't you listen to Ron at RE/MAX?
Ron Neal?
Yes, Ron Neal, back in 2012, when he said rates were low, prices were down, there were lots to choose from, and it was the perfect time to buy.
Time travel isn't possible, but long-term thinking is. Secure your future. Click on RonNeal.com today.
Call the Neal Estate Team for your real estate dream. RonNeal.com.
What does it take to operate a farm? Commitment to a lifestyle, hard work, practical knowledge of the basics? The friendly folks at Integrity Sales get it. So you can count on Integrity Sales to have what you need when you need it. No call center, just good old-fashioned personal service and trusted expertise. Whatever you need for your farm, from new turkeys and chicks to large animal feed and equipment to ease the chores, expect the best at Integrity Sales. 2180 Keating Cross Road, where the professionals shop.
Hi, I'm James McKenzie from Monk Office. As an island-grown company, Monk Office believes in making a difference in our community, including minimizing our impact on our environment. We believe little changes in everyday habits can make a big difference. Take a look at your office supplies. Why not use a pen made from recycled plastic or recycled paper in your printer? Check out all our earth-friendly options in any of our stores or at monk.ca. Together we make a difference.
Very helpful, most helpful.
Right here at home.
Your anniversary, summer vacation, Christmas Day, and Barclays Big Sale event. The best things happen only once a year. Hi, Jeffrey here from Barclays Fine Custom Jewellers. Take advantage of incredible prices when we have almost everything in store marked from 10 to 50% off during our Big Sale event. Aside from Pandora line of products and the jewellery we're wearing, pretty much everything else is on sale.
Visit Barclays Fine Custom Jewellers in Oak Bay Village for their Big Sale event September 8th through the 22nd.
Victoria's first choice for information, news, weather, traffic. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Well, everyone is waiting with great anticipation to my solution to the whole issue.
And if you don't say it quick, you're done.
Okay.
You're out of here.
Okay. Well, I mean...
Turn his mic off.
We go straight to the issue of access student debt. And you know, one idea that has... not received a lot of currency yet in this country, but it's been adopted in other countries, you know, Australia in particular, that I think is worth taking a look at if we want to think about paradigm shifts, is the whole issue of income contingent loans. And that's that all student assistance is based on a loan, but it's income contingent in that that loan is paid back as you are able to. And if you don't have a job, you're not making a repayment. And whatever repayment you make is contingent on what your income is. And you may spend the rest of your working life, you know, paying back that loan. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of that is that you shift from tuition only being for part of the cost of your education to all of a sudden being for the majority of your education. So tuition, you know, all of a sudden the power is put in the hands of the students. Now, I can tell you, you know, faculty associations and universities in particular are very opposed to this idea of students sort of determining, you know, where they're going to go. But you then start to get into trade-offs. If you look at university and the cost of university education, well, the cost of a science degree or a cost of a computing degree or a cost of an engineering degree is significantly higher than the cost of getting a history degree. So if you go and you get a history degree, you know, it costs you less, you pay less, your loan is lower, and so on and so forth. And so there are, you know, it's not perfect, but what it does is it shifts the responsibility onto the students to make responsible choices as to what they do, as to what type of institution they attend, and what they study, and it puts the full burden on them, but in a financial burden on them, but in a manner that is not onerous. And you know, the operationally, the way it works is obviously what's happening with the money that government spends now on operating grants is being used as the bridge to provide the funding for the loans.
So
I think that's a great idea, but looking back at the data, the statistical information about any kind of government involvement with student loans is that students have been traditionally paying back very low default rates on, mm-hmm. on loans. So they have been doing a good job. And basically what they're finding is that the province and the feds, whatever they spend on post-secondary education, they double up in the mm-hmm. long run.
Mm-hmm.
So with students going into the workforce and getting great jobs, they are their investment doubles.
Yeah, but just to be clear, I'm talking about taking the student debt as we understand it today and basically doubling it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what students would be paying is they would be paying through their tuition, they would be paying for the cost of their education rather than just a portion of it. So we're significantly increasing student debt while at the same time not making it less onerous than it is now.
Yeah, a lot of people would say that's really dangerous. There was a really big public outcry at the beginning of this year when the feds raised their debt ceiling from $15 billion to $19 billion. Mm-hmm. People started to get really antsy about that because they worry about student debt. They worry about the implications
But they wouldn't have to worry about student debt because it would be income contingent.
Well, so I've got a couple of things to say. One is, yeah. I'll thank you for finally sharing your solution with us.
So, I can tell everyone's just rocked by it.
Totally rocked by
okay.
it. I mean, okay, I'll just throw this out because it just struck me. What about rather than income contingent debt repayment, what if we had income contingent tuition payment? Just as an idea, then, and it would be take. We're talking about, you know, during the break when the commercial was on, we were talking about the need for a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. And so let's think outside the box a little bit. The other thing is, I mean, one of the significant problems with our current economy is that the entire thing is debt financed, right? And so do we really, not the entire thing, but that's what the problem was. That's why we got into the crisis in the 2008 and beyond. And do we really want to encourage students to create more and more debt that they're paying off for the rest of their lives? Now, one thing that we've been talking about is how to finance the current tuition rates, mm-hmm. right? But the other piece of the puzzle is how do we reduce tuition? I mean, when I started at UVic, so I started at Trent University in 1995. When I started at UVic, I was like $2,600 a year to finish my undergrad. That's pretty reasonable. And then the tuition freeze came in just as I left and, you know, 90% increase over 3 years. So I think we need to look not just at how students are going to finance their education, but what can we do to look at the tuition piece.
No, we'll go to you in a second. I'm going to go to you. I just want to be clear, and for our listeners, the reason I want to focus on this is that, you know, this isn't just a nice touchy-feely thing about, you know, making sure that, you know, every little Johnny and Susie get to go to university or college or a technical institute. You know,
why
we
not?
All well, but because I'm about
not to that end.
No, because, you know, what I'm saying, Danielle, is that we all have an interest in that being the case,
yeah.
As a community, okay, that is, you know, we have K-12 for and make kids go to school for a reason. Post-secondary education is an extension of that, and as a community, as a society, as an economy, we have a vested interest in seeing that every single person who has the ability and has the interest has access to the training or education that they want and need to get. And right now, there are barriers.
So and they're increasing.
So you're going, I actually am profoundly in disagreement with you and your solution.
All right, let's hear it, John.
Let's hear it, John.
Okay, I I've been in private sector biz for 30 years, you know, a chamber guy, et cetera. Without increasing the education of our youth and our society, our country as a whole will deteriorate on multiple levels.
That's what I just said. Dale's saying that's what Bob just said.
Therefore, I think access to education should be not incumbent on someone's ability to manage debt. It should start to get freer. It should start to become less expensive.
That's what I just said.
I'm disagreeing with Bob's solution.
Yes. Okay.
And therefore leading to.
So how are you going to fund it? How are you going to fund
it? Well, we're talking about that.
Okay.
And so more corporations involved, a shift in emphasis, perhaps more entrepreneurial issues. Danielle's brought in, if that happens, what are the consequences to the style and content of our education? But I do not agree in any which way that we encumber the students with more debt. Sorry, Bob.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, come on. Is that it? I've never seen you speechless.
I'm looking at Dale. Dale wants to say something.
Well, I think we're all in agreement that our nation...
Apparently we're not.
Well, listen, we are on this, that we all agree, everybody on the radio that's in on this panel agrees that a knowledge-based economy is going to help this nation and our backyard communities. What I have a problem with is let's go back a little bit, step it up a bit. As a community, you got to have a shared vision. And underneath that shared vision, one of them has to say, a knowledge economy is important to making this place a better place.
Dale, that's easy
to say.
I know. Who's going to pay for that?
But just a second.
Who's going to pay for it?
No, I said the students should pay for it.
No. My point is, we still haven't agreed that it's a priority.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
As a region, we have still not agreed and bought into.
Sure we have.
No, we haven't, John.
Who hasn't?
Well, there was a poll.
Is there a shared vision on that?
Daniela wants to get in here. She's not in the studio.
Yeah, I know.
Danielle, I'm protecting you here because I can tell you what happens in the studio is elbows start to fly, things like that. You're not able to do that. I'm here for you, Danielle.
Thank you.
Okay, so go ahead.
There was a poll recently that said that 60% of Canadians support free university education. I'm not saying we go there, but that's an interesting stat. 60% want free education.
And
obviously, it didn't work in Europe, so you don't want to do that. I mean, even places like Germany had to have a basic tuition just to keep people from loafing around at college because it was free. So I don't support that either. But I really think that government money needs to be better spent. Administrators also have to spend their money more wisely. But government money, whether it's the feds or the province, needs to be better spent. So the feds spend multi-billions of dollars on research funding, and it does help. But we've slipped. I mean, in that period of time, I think where our OECD rank has gone from 4th to 15th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our ranking has gone down.
Dale, you have 1 minute.
Our rank has gone down. We're more focused on resources than on our knowledge-based economy. Let's get to Lisa brought up a point. We've got to be paradigm shift, innovative. Stanford, example, online education. Interesting. So technology and that whole outreach of education and how they're delivering education training is really changing, and it's going to have an impact on our entire ecosystem of teaching our children and our students and our adults.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to talk about maybe after the break, if we're running away to have a commercial break, is around retention and targets for post-secondary education. Mm-hmm. Again, I have two strong principles. I don't think that the community has totally bought in that in order to improve the Capital Regional District, the knowledge-based economy is critical to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, what are we going to do to it? What is the shared vision to do that? And what are some metrics and targets?
Dale, they have. Problem is, you'd start to look at a $50,000 bill to do that. People go elsewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Folks, we have to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
You've locked your doors.
Come on.
You think you're safe.
What?
But you can't stop.
No. Oh. Oh.
The arrival of your bills.
No.
CFAX 1070 understands.
That's why we're giving you a chance to beat your bills.
Head over to the all-new CFAX1070.com and show us the bill you want taken care of. Then listen for Al Farabee to announce your name weekday mornings at 7:10.
You can win $50 to spend at Red Barn Market,
taking the pressure off your food bill. And you'll qualify to have CFAX 1070 pay up to $500 to beat your bills. To enter and for full details, head to CFAX1070.com.
Don't yell at your bills.
Get away!
Bills. Beat your bills with Red Barn Market and Victoria's News Authority. CFAX 1070.
Let the sunshine in with Excalibur Glass. Get more out of your outdoor or indoor deck with a custom all-glass railing. Constructed with aluminum post supports, these railings are durable and attractive with no top or bottom rail to obscure your view. And of course, it'll add value to your home. Get the most out of your scenery with a custom all-glass railing from Excalibur Glass. You'll clearly see the difference. Excalibur Glass and Aluminum, the homeowner's store. 2189 Keating Cross Road.
This year, Dance Victoria invites you to see the world. Now on sale, featuring award-winning choreography from Spain, Britain, Israel, the U.S., Canada, and New Zealand. Buy before October 15th and save on stunning performances by Le Ballet Jazz de Montreal, Rubber Band Dance Group, and New Zealand's dynamic Black Grace, a fusion of Maori and contemporary dance in a heart-stopping performance you'll never forget. Go to dancevictoria.com for videos. Dance Victoria, see the world. Proudly sponsored by Dermaspa.
First time I saw a dead body, I just really wanted to touch him.
Once you're in, there's no getting out.
You've always been like family to me, Grass.
Say hello to Dr. Devlin. She took an oath to save lives, but now reports to a bigger boss.
I'll cover you as best I can, but she belonged to me.
It's a dirty job.
I never agreed to kill somebody.
Yes, you did.
Everyone has their price.
It's time to do your job, Grace.
CTV's The Mob Doctor. New series starts tonight at 9.
Crawling through Colwood, packed on the Pat Bay, mixed up on Mackenzie, and maneuvering through the Malahat, first with traffic. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome back. Sunday morning public affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. We're talking about post-secondary education. We're having a lively conversation today, lively even in the commercial breaks. And, you know, coming back, I just want to sort of, Dale, you talked about, the lack of, of a vision, and it gets the whole notion of, what is we want our post-secondary education system to do and to achieve, and we don't really have that discussion anymore. And one of the reasons, maybe we've never had the discussion is because, we have this rather inconvenient truth, sometimes inconvenient truth, and that's, Canada is a confederation and education was deemed for historical reasons to be so important to give to the provinces that they even gave it its own section of the Constitution to make sure that if you didn't pick it up earlier when you were reading the document, that it was sort of blinking at you right there. Education is a provincial responsibility, and God help the federal government that dares go anywhere near it. And what's happened over time is that, provinces have permitted and allowed the federal government to fund student assistance for post-secondary education and research. But, no federal government ever has, nor would it dare, attempt to sit in a room with provincial governments and even broach the subject of having national goals in education or post-secondary education. They would be run out of the room. Comments?
Sure, I'll try to get in there a little bit. So I think we got to always look at the ODC report and on our competitiveness, and it's pretty clear that it says to us that we're focusing a lot on our natural resources, and I'm a true believer that our greatest natural resources are people, and that they're the ones that are going to steward our natural resources well into the future. And our own Governor General David Johnson, a mentor of mine that I listen to regularly, is quoted by saying, "Knowledge, as opposed to military might or GDP, is gaining momentum as the new currency and passport to success." I think, you know, we've got a lot to be celebrate. Canada's doing well. Victoria is doing well. But we've got to get on with, and I want to bring it to Victoria, that we can't blame the college or the university or Pearson College. They're doing a great job. I think as a community, we need to come together and say, we can do better in this environment. And I think that we can't just learn or lean to and rely on government. That goes back to my comment, it's a neighborhood builds a community. It's up to us. It's up to all of us.
But we do also expect that our tax dollars are spent wisely by governments. And so we don't see our tax dollars going down, obviously. So at the same time, we think that this the rate, the status of education remains the same. And it doesn't. It obviously doesn't anymore.
But yes, you know what? As Dale was speaking, it's interesting. I agree. We need a shared vision as a region, and I think we need to build stronger ties between what's happening in the community and what's happening at universities. And to use a metaphor of resource extraction, right? We extract our natural resources and make lots of money so doing. We need to create the conditions locally, regionally, provincially, and nationally to extract knowledge, right? And to create the conditions for knowledge creation, because that is what's going to lead us into the future, where we have a chance as a nation, as a province, and as a region to create something new, because old ways are not going to work, and we need to invest our money, whether it's corporate money, private money, individual money, government money, all of that together, into creating something that's going to work for the next century, because old ways will not.
Well, but back to Danielle's point, you know, government is a big player at the table. Whether it's doing a good job or bad is relevant.
Well, and I agree completely with Danielle that government resources, government monies, can be deployed much differently and much more efficiently. And I know we're going to have a show coming up on fiscal responsibility coming in the next weeks or months. But that is where we need to look at government. We need to say, how is this being spent? Is it being spent well? And how can it be deployed better to bring tuition down, to get better access?
And the key thing there, and this gets to back to what we were talking about here and what Dale keeps returning back to, if we're going to assess if it's being spent well, we better decide what it is we want it to do.
Exactly. Yeah,
is it a priority?
But okay,
exactly.
Okay, great. I think we're all in agreement. We all want it to happen. How are we going to pay for it? That's where we started this conversation. There are two instances now, recent instances in which we can talk about and drill into this question and see where we really land. Naming rights. Naming rights. Okay, can a corporation, an entity, a non-government entity put naming rights on something to generate revenue for education? Number one. Number two, fascinated by what happened in Quebec. About 3 weeks ago, you challenged me with talking about the Quebec election. I said, who cares? No. Actually, this issue about what the students did in Quebec is fundamental to this to the answer we're trying to seek here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What would we do in BC? Mm-hmm. I would have joined the students. Mm-hmm.
I found that interesting that the BC students didn't join in themselves in the Quebec protest.
Well, yeah.
Students in general.
Students nowhere outside of Quebec. You know, they just sort of sat there and went, oh, gee, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Did they have an answer? No, that's what we're hammering around here.
Yeah.
But I challenge our panel this morning.
So
how are we going to pay for what we want to get?
Okay,
but we
got to always come back to, after we've established that we want this to be a priority for this region, this community, and our nation,
which we have,
we then have to put into place. Well, how are we doing? And not just rely on reports of OEDC. We have to start throwing targets out there. So let's take Greater Victoria, for example. We graduate 5,000 students a year. So as a community, and not just the responsibility of a post-secondary education institute and president and executive, we should be saying to ourselves, well, of those 5,000 students, if we want to be a smarter city, how many do we need to retain? So take out a dart, throw it on the board, and let's say it's 2,500. It's then you can ask the question, how are we going to do it? And what kind of students are we graduating?
I disagree. I think that we need to go to the place where we have 20,000 students graduating instead of 5.
Well, John.
And a good portion of that is because a ton of them can't afford to get into the system.
John, let's look at what we have today. And how are we going to make it better when we sit here 12 months from now? There's 5,000 students that graduate every year and go into our community. How many do we retain as a target, and how are we going to do it? Who's responsible to do that?
I think that's a great question. But I agree with John, though, that's part of the problem or a part of the challenge. And if we had measurables and we said we want this many students to stay and contribute to the region's economy, that's important. So I don't want to say that's not important. What's also important from the other end, and I think this is what Bob was getting at earlier, is which 5,000 students are getting there in the first place? And are we missing a whole really, really intelligent, potential-laden demographic because tuition costs $6,000 a year? And if we had different people or, you know, to John's, I agree, let's fix the problem first before we triple it by or multiply it by 4. If we had different people having access, more people having access, what would the potential of those 5,000 people be? Would it be different? So there's the retention in the region question, but there's also the access at the front end.
Yeah, Danielle, I had a sense you wanted to jump in there.
That's the really important point. And then there again, you come down to what kind of incentives can we have to get a better student loan program? And the BC government's been appalling with that. I mean, the BC chapter of the Canadian Federation of Students say it's going to get worse too. So we're lowest in Canada. Our report card is terrible for those kind of things. So what do we have? Eliminated student aid program in 2004. We don't have a student aid program.
But I think the answer isn't student loans. And I think this is where John and I...
Well, this is student aid. This is non-repayable loans.
Right. But, okay, still, so student aid, but I think the government, provincial government and universities themselves, and it sounds like universities and colleges are more into this. We heard from the Camosun College president earlier, need to think more entrepreneurial. The government itself needs to think, I think what Dale's saying, what are the measurables? How do we get there? How do we pay for it? And how do we ensure that as many people in our population have access without spiraling into debt to do so? I think that there are some really creative ways for the Ministry of Education to think more entrepreneurial, to make sure that there's access, and then that creates a greater base of knowledge and a more educated populace and a better human resource.
Well, it's interesting because the ministry has actually, they have a bunch of performance measures now. The last few years they've introduced a whole bunch of performance measures, and the universities aren't crazy about them. They say it bogs them down in even more paperwork. And a lot of the advocates for student rights say it's not the university's job to make sure that these students are job ready. It's actually the government's job to make sure that that happens after the fact. It's the university's job to educate the students. The best means possible, that means definitely private-public partnerships, that means access to all sorts of programs, but ultimately to tie all of this labor readiness to universities, a lot of people say is completely unfair.
Well, but I mean, I know Dale wants to jump in here, but I think one of the real problems when we start getting into this issue is people use the expression job ready, and everyone's talking about something different.
Yeah.
They don't define it. Yeah.
I think our Lisa talks about we have to be innovative and change, and I think our system, our ecosystem of school, has evolved, and I think that this idea of getting students ready and to contribute to society and the community, the workforce is happening. They have done a lot of things. You got to look at the co-op programs and all that inter-exchange. Mm-hmm. We are doing it, and thank you, universities. Thank you, colleges. Thank you, principals and teachers. You're doing a good job at bringing innovative ideas into how you deliver your education to this community. We just need to do better and more of it.
And get more people through the door.
We just need to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back with our last segment of the show.
Good dog! Good dog! Mmm, that's a very good dog.
With the taste of Island Bakery, the ordinary becomes extraordinary. Hot dogs become super dogs. Hamburgers become super burgers. Sandwiches become... Well, you get the idea. That's because Island Bakery hot dog and hamburger buns are baked locally and delivered to your grocery store daily. So if you want to turn your next summer event into a super summer event, make sure you pick up the delicious home-style taste of Island Bakery.
The word home means a relaxed, comfortable setting. I'm Linda Bishop of Highgate Lodge, where home is waiting for you, where you'll feel the warmth the moment you arrive. You'll be invited to join in, but the choice is always yours. You can go on weekly shopping trips with friends. You start the day with a good breakfast and enjoyable company. You finish the day with sharing a meal with friends. You can be assured of a helping hand if you need it, because you're home. Call 250-472-0077 for a tour. Come home to Highgate.
End of the Rolls Big Anniversary Sale is on now, where you can save up to 25% off the suggested retail price on our brand name selection of hardwood flooring. And for a limited time only, pay only $179 per square foot on a special power buy of Berber and Frise carpets. Come and celebrate with us during the Big Anniversary Sale at our 53 locations nationwide. Visit End of the Roll today.
Come see our new location on 601 Boleskine Road and on Millstream Road in Langford.
One day as a young boy, I was captivated by the sight of a roofing crew working on our family home. That picture stayed with me. And years later, when I bought my own home, I asked Mom about that experience.
It was Sam the Roofer. They re-roofed our second home, too.
Sam the Roofer. Now they're replacing my roof. I didn't know it back then, but it was their tireless skill and workmanship that left such a lasting impression.
Sam the Roofer. True to their core beliefs. Client satisfaction and quality workmanship.
Sam the Roofing Man.
Serving Southern Vancouver Island for over 50 years.
Shop, spin, and win with Save On Foods for a chance to win a Caribbean cruise for four and more great prizes. Plus, get assorted Nature Valley granola bars or Betty Crocker fruit by the foot, card price $5 for $10, or frozen pork back ribs, buy one, get one free. Visit Save On Foods and shopandspin.com for complete details. Save On Foods, BC's very own since 1915.
When news breaks, Victoria turns to CFAX 1070. News, weather, traffic. When you need to know. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back. You're listening to our last segment of Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. And in I know that everyone who's been part of this morning's discussion is just really anxious to sum everything up, to conclude on what we've done. If I might take the first stab, we seem to be saying that, you know, once we decide what it is we want to accomplish, what our post-secondary system to accomplish, then the affordability part, the funding part, will just follow. The barriers are at the front end. The barriers are – we're probably all in agreement. John, you made the great comment about, you know, students in Quebec, you know, going out on strike. And if it happened here, you would have been with the students, right? That and everyone, of course, you know, completely –
If they let me.
If they let you, no. And because you wouldn't be passing as a student, I can assure
no,
you. Okay?
That's right.
The you know, but the problem – at the front end is there does not seem to be a mechanism or a forum through which we can all understand that we're pretty much in agreement as to what it is we want our post-secondary system to do. There's no place where that's congealing. And so this is where I come back to what Danielle keeps coming back to. You know, isn't that the government's job? I mean, like Dale, I mean, I agree with you. We shouldn't be relying on government to fix everything. Absolutely.
Yeah, but one, if there's one side of the ledger is saying there's no money and the other side saying there is.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to analyze that before next May.
You know, but it seems to me though, John, the first thing you have to do is you have to go through that process of understanding the degree to which there is a level of agreement as to what it is we want to accomplish. And I think one of the things I'm hearing around this table from people who are coming from very different perspectives and had very different experiences, is that we are in agreement that we need to get everyone and anyone we can into our post-secondary system to be as educated and as trained and have the opportunity to revisit it on a lifelong basis, you know, that is what we and cost should be no barrier, okay, to people having that access. So does
that bring us back to where we started 2 hours ago?
Well, that wouldn't be a surprise if it did. But I mean, it gets us back to, okay, so you know, it goes to the issue of why we don't talk about this issue except in forums like this. Why is a community, why is a nation, why is a province, you know, why we're not talking about these things?
And I think it really needs to go back to, we talk about the mentorship, it really needs to go back to the dinner table for kids. And kids need to see their parents engaged. Kids need to know that their parents teach them that their voice matters and that they can have an impact on what happens with government, that they're more engaged.
Yep.
So parents need to be more engaged. They need to teach their kids to be more engaged, to understand that their voice matters. And then that needs to happen at the post-secondary level as well with professors and teachers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what happens around the dinner table is arguably important. But I also think that, do we truly have a shared vision of what education, what post-secondary education is supposed to do? And I think we've heard a number of visions articulated this morning. One is that ideas are meant to be generated, fostered, created, workshopped, and taken to market. And I think that has become one of the things that's driving this conversation, both here and at the government level, is this, and I appreciate Bob's comment earlier about what is job readiness. And if the entire point of post-secondary education is to create job readiness, then I think we as a society are in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if the point of post-secondary education is to create job readiness and strengthen communities and build the local economy and do all of those things and be a space where critical ideas, critical thinking can be developed, can be fostered, can be challenged, then I think that we're going somewhere. And I think that probably part of the reason we're having trouble asking how should we pay for this is because we don't know exactly what it is we want the outcomes to be. One is the commercialization, the market readiness of ideas, but that is not the only purpose. And I think that has become the only purpose in the public realm, and particularly in terms of government funding, the only purpose of post-secondary education, and that's probably why we're so narrowly focused on how to fund it.
So I'm going to jump in here and say, you know, UVic celebrating its 50th this year. Mm-hmm. We have a park that's celebrating its 10th. Mm-hmm. And we live in a world where the knowledge-based economy is incredibly important. We're sitting in Victoria, or the listeners may be sitting in their own community. We challenge them. I challenge them. Is that there needs to be more conversation around the role of this, because it's the economy, and it has a role in every aspect of the economy. And as a region, it's not just up to the David Turpins and the executives and the Camosans and the Pearsons and the park to do its role in that. It's a community conversation on how are we going to use a knowledge-based economy to improve greater Victoria and the capital region and this beautiful island we live on.
Well, and to relate it to what Lisa just said, it's yes, you know, the economy, but it's also society.
Yeah, which is...
It's the community.
Which every aspect, yeah. Every job that we can think of, every role, every dinner table.
Let's not forget, you know, and Danielle, and sorry, I'll let you in a second here. I was just going to say that, you know, let's go back to the first ever public education system, which was in the United States. And you know, as Thomas Jefferson said, you know, we're a democracy. We have to train citizens. That's why we have a public education system. Danielle?
And those trained citizens include private sector people. So
yes.
The corporate sector also needs to be more responsible for this. They need to be more engaged in this. And who knows, maybe we could think about increasing corporate taxes. We have the lowest in Canada, don't we?
I immediately looked to the board member of the BC Chamber of Commerce and just said,
"Let's
John,
say this. Let's say this. Since you've brought in accountability to what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I think that has to be looked within a broader framework of solutions. We will generally, on the business side, tend to want to look at other solutions prior to that one.
Mm-hmm. That's it? You're just full stop right there? You're not saying anything else?
Like what solutions? What kind of solutions?
I think that we've talked about a myriad of them over 2 hours.
Dale?
Yeah. So let's...
It's a conversation ended
great.
That one.
Yeah, well, and oh, I was going to say, Danielle, great question.
And it's a big conversation that would probably could take a whole show, but it's very important. We've only got 5 minutes, four minutes.
We have less than that. We have even less than that. We have
summer
two.
Up.
So, you know, again, let's go back to the wrap here and a challenge.
Yeah.
Let's not just make this a two-hour show. Let's not just leave it where it's at. Let's challenge our community and any of the listeners that are in another community to have a conversation and get a room and get a table and invite all the folks that need to be around the table.
That's probably happening at the universities.
Well,
they're too busy.
Yeah, you see, I don't think it is happening, but they are having that.
Absolutely.
They are doing that, and they're doing it well, but we need to not allow it to just be the universities.
Exactly.
And they do bring others in the community in. I think we got to step up and get more
absolutely
engaged.
We've been talking a lot about tech and UVic and tech. The University of Victoria has an amazing office. It's called the Office of Community-Based Research.
Absolutely.
And they have been they've been in existence for 4, maybe 5 years. They're revisioning, they're looking at their mandate, and they are drawing community in. And our collective responsibility for education doesn't start at the beginning of Ring Road.
Danielle, one last quick comment before we have to go.
I agree with all of that, and I found that most of the people I spoke with in the private sector, the individuals I spoke with, really cared about what was going on with the universities. That's why they were spending multi-millions of dollars on donations. Okay. But they were also willing to say, hey, our government needs to step up as well.
Okay. Well, folks, I'm going to have to call it an end right there.
Darn.
Okay. I want to thank everyone. I want to thank our producer, the digitally dexterous TJ Mullen. My co-host and fellow traveler, John Jurisic, Victoria City Councillor and community activist, Lisa Helps. And in case you didn't get that, it's Lisa Helps. Dale Gann, president of Technology Parks at Vancouver Island Technology Park and Marine Technology Center, and Vancouver-based writer and contributing editor for Vancouver Magazine and the Tyee, Danielle Egan. Our goal here at Sunday Morning Public Affairs is to inform and stimulate. We hope we did that today. But just before we go, one final personal note before we end, one that I think will resonate with those many in our audience who, like me, came to this great city from the province that borders us. We lost a great Canadian this week whose government I was fortunate enough to work for. When Pierre Trudeau asked his famous question, who will speak for Canada, it was Peter Lougheed who quickly answered, we all will. And he certainly did his part in that regard. He was representative of a generation that went into politics to change things for the better. In his case, he succeeded. When he left, he was at the top of his game. How often do you see that happen? Our condolences go out to his family as well as our thanks for sharing him with the country. Canada was left better for it.